Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
Thank you for joining us at Compass today, moms. I'm especially glad that you joined us today with your kids. It is great to see all of you. If you are like me, and I'm sure everyone is like me, when you grew up, you had this idealized picture of what your mom was like. Now, I'm sure, like, just to be fair, everyone just close your eyes and just think about your mom. And like, get that image of what your mom was like. Because I guarantee you, for all of us, there's that one snapshot, right? Okay, you can open your eyes, you have that together. So me, I'm in my very, very, I don't know, late 20s, let's just say that. And so my mom's been around for a little while, but I have this one, I don't even know if she's here. I'm sorry, mom. I don't know if that came across right. But I have this one like vivid image of my mom from growing up. And when I think about my mom, it's, I don't know why, but that's it. And so I remember when I was a kid, for some reason, the image I have of my mom is probably me being 4 or 5, and she had this like safety yellow sweatshirt that was like neon, it would blind you. And this image, when I think of my mom, it's summer, and it's her in the safety yellow sweatshirt with like a handkerchief over her hair, and there's like the smell of Pine Sol, and it's just kitchen cleaning. Like, when I think of my mom, that's what it is. And it's just, it's summer, it's beautiful, it's windows open, and I just close my eyes and I think about that idealized moment. That's what it is. Now, we all have those things, you know, maybe it's for you, that idealized moment is, you know, Christmas morning, or maybe it's, you know, mom, she always made those pancakes for you. But we all have this kind of like perfect picture of motherhood from when we were kids. What's interesting though is that as we grow up, we still hold on to that idealized picture of motherhood. And for those of you who have had kids of your own and you are moms, you know specifically what I'm talking about, because this idealized picture of motherhood that you had, you held on to it when you had kids because you thought you were going to be that ideal mother, didn't you? Like, I remember when we had our first daughter, Cameron, and we were so excited, and we were young, and just, we were ready to take on the world, and Terry was so excited about just being a stay-at-home mom. Now, we were too poor to do it, and so we knew she was going to have to work, but she was going to take that, you know, 3 to 6 weeks off from work, while the baby was just still fresh and new, and just be a stay-at-home mom and just enjoy it while she could before she had to go back to work and just go back to horrible regular life. And I remember she was just, oh, being a stay-at-home mom is just going to be the best thing ever. And if I could just be a stay-at-home mom, life would be perfect. And, you know, bluebirds would sing outside my window every morning. And it's just going to be lovely. What was so great about that is I remember her staying home with Cameron for those first several weeks. And I would come home from work, and dads, you can relate to this. I would come in tired and worn out from the day, and I would sit down and want to maybe turn on the TV. And Terry, who's had no conversation with an adult all day, sits down next to me and just starts going, brrr. And it's like she didn't even do anything. She was with the baby all day. So it's not like there was like stuff that happened that to really talk, but she just needed to talk. She's, I just got to talk. I just got to talk. And I'd be like, uh-huh, uh-huh, click, uh-huh, uh-huh. X-Files, huh? Yeah, uh-huh. You know, just whatever we could watch. And what was interesting is at the end of that kind of 2 or 3 week period, Terry sat down and she said, I cannot wait to go back to work. I have got to get out of this house and get away from this baby because I have to have some adult interaction and adult conversation. She had this idealized image of the perfect stay-at-home mom, right? Because that's kind of how she grew up imagining this motherhood. And if I could just be that, everything will be okay. But growing up and having kids of her own, she realized, okay, that's not what it is. But here's the thing is the ideal didn't go away. It just kind of shifted and changed. So now this idealized mom is not this, you know, this mom in a neon sweatshirt with the do-rag on her head, cleaning the kitchen with Lysol on a perfect summer day. Now it's this woman who holds down a professional career, but she can still, you know, take care of the family. And, you know, it's this woman who works 40 hours a week. She still raises up perfect kids. You know, she has, you know, the perfect body and perfect clothes. The house is always clean. She cooks Food Network quality meals, and her husband feels like a king. That is now this like idealized image of motherhood. And moms, you can laugh at that, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, that's kind of like society's culture. This image, this pressure, really, if you will, of what moms are supposed to be now. The problem, though, is that woman doesn't really exist, right? That woman, she's not a real person. She's maybe someone you might see on like TV somewhere, but she doesn't really exist. Check this out. I read a Barna survey on motherhood. They surveyed a bunch of moms, and some of you moms are going to be like, well, duh, I already knew this, but 60% of moms are dissatisfied with their work-home balance. 80% of moms are stressed out, twice as likely than other women to get physically sick from that stress than non-moms. 70% of moms are tired. That's a no-brainer. 50% of moms feel overcommitted. 70% of moms say that family takes up a majority or most of their times. And 100% of moms want to punch their husband in the face at least once a week. I added that last one. That wasn't in the survey. I just believed that was probably true. But moms live in a society and in a culture where there's all sorts of expectations on them to be and to perform and to reach these new heights and these new levels. And that pressure is very real. And here's what's crazy is that kind of expectation, it doesn't even just come from outside. Now it's inside. It's even in our families with our kids sometimes are caught on to this. You know, this morning Calvin gave Terry her Mother's Day card. He made up at school this little fake Time magazine that he made at school with a picture of his mom on the cover. Inside it said, "Why my mom should be the mom of the year." And one of the things he wrote in there that was so cute, he said, "My mom should be considered to be Time's mom of the year because she has no time to relax and she spends hours cooking." Okay, well, that's her qualification, mom of the year, because she has no time to relax and spends hours cooking. There's this burden of expectations that I think a lot of moms feel, and I think most of the moms in here could relate to that. But I think we can all relate to that idea of expectation. You know, we all kind of have this sense, we all know what it feels like to walk into a situation where we are expected to be or act or look a certain way. And it's a pressure that a lot of times we feel like we can't meet, but it's so there. And the weight of that pressure, the weight of that expectation can just build and build and build. And you know, for moms, it's, you know, it's this pressure to raise kids that, you know, aren't crazy or rabid. But, you know, for all of us, it's like, you know, I got to get a good house. I got to get a good job. I got to get into the right school. I got to get my kids into the right kindergarten so they can have a good future and a good career. And just all of the, I got to look my best. I got to sound my best. I got to be my best. I got to be physically fit. And just expectation, expectation. It's just pressure and it's pressure and it's pressure. And it's just put on all of us. And what's interesting is that in the Bible, we can look at the life of Jesus and we can see that this type of expectation, this culture of expectation, it existed back in his day too. And now we're in the middle of a series called Follow. And really what we've been looking at over the last several weeks is, what does it really mean to follow Jesus? And so, you know, recap, we've talked about how a relationship with Jesus or following Jesus is all about relationship. It's all about our relationship with each other and our relationship with God. We talked about the fact that following Jesus, that it's not about being perfect or being good, but that really being a sinner is a prerequisite. Jesus never called anyone to follow him who wasn't messed up, who wasn't a sinner. So some of you guys are like, we'll fit right in with the rest of us. You know, you don't have to believe everything to be a follower of Jesus before you can enter into that relationship, because the people who followed Jesus, who walked with him, they didn't believe everything Jesus said about himself. It wasn't until Jesus died and rose from the dead that they're like, oh, okay, wait a minute, I get it. All that stuff Jesus said about himself, now it all clicks and makes sense. So you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to not be a sinner. You don't have to necessarily believe everything. There's steps to following Jesus that it's a journey, and no matter where you are kind of in this, whether you're at the beginning of it and you're sitting in here like, well, church, Jesus, whatever, I'm not sure about any of it. Hey, you've got one step that you can take to Jesus, or you've been a follower of Jesus for years. There's always room for us to continue in a relationship closer and closer to him. But the thing is this, in following Jesus, we have to come to grips with the fact that there are expectations that society, that culture, and that religion are going to put on us in this relationship that we have with God. And Jesus was no stranger to this, because Jesus dealt with a group of people who became so wrapped up in a culture of expectation and in this expectation of perfection that it influenced all of Jewish society back in the day. And this was a group of people called the Pharisees. Now, let me give you some background on these guys. These guys, they didn't start out all bad. Now, you guys have all heard Pharisees, and, oh, Pharisees, they're hypocrites, they're mean, and they're nasty. You know, they hated Jesus. These guys are just bad dudes. Well, Pharisees didn't start that way. You see, about 1,000 years before Jesus, you know, came to earth, about 1,000 BC, the Greeks basically ruled that whole area of the world. And the Greeks took over Israel, where all the Jewish people lived. And when they did that, they decided that they were going to outlaw any religions, that they were going to basically Hellenize every culture and every society. So they were going to make everyone Greek just like they were. Now, the Jewish people who lived in the area at the time, they were not down with that. And there was this group of guys called Maccabeans. And they followed a guy who was basically a Maccabean. And that's why they're called these guys. And they decided, we are going to revolt. We're not down with this. We want to worship our God the way we want to. And so for about 2 years, there was kind of this revolutionary war that was fought against the Greeks who were kind of, you know, lording it over the Jews at that time. And the Maccabeans fought and they won their freedom and they won their right to worship their God. Now, that continued on and the Romans came in and took over that society. But these Jewish fighters, these Jewish freedom fighters, they won. So now they could worship their God in any way they wanted. These guys were heroes and they were religious heroes. They were righteous heroes because they fought for God. But what happens is, as often happens with people who fight a war but then don't know what to do after it, they decided that their struggle for righteousness had to continue. And so these group of guys who originally fought for freedom from the Greeks decided that they were going to continue on this pursuit of holy living. And so these guys who were respected and admired as heroes, they started a movement towards holy living, but it became something totally different than what they intended it to be. What started out as a movement to move people towards God became something constricting and confining. And the Pharisee movement grew out of this rebellion in the 1,000 years that happened after it. And what happened is the Pharisees, instead of being people who said, we want right relationship with God, they said, we want everyone to live by holy rules and expectations. And so they took the Old Testament law, the Jewish law, and they added 600 laws and regulations on top of the laws that all of the Jews followed at that day. Because basically they said this. They said, okay, if God's law says not to do this, we need to have 10 laws around that so that we don't even get close to that. And so just laws on top of laws, regulations on top of regulations, and they started to stack up. And then they reached a point where it's not good enough for us just to live this way. It's not just enough for us to put these expectations on ourselves, but we think everyone should live by these expectations. Everyone should carry the burden of these laws if we have to carry the burden of these laws. And these guys, I mean, the temple laws at the time, there was a Jewish temple, and the priests of the temple, they had to follow these strict rules. I mean, rules of purification, cleansing. I mean, there was the inner room of the temple, and like priests had to have a rope tied around them in case they went in there and God killed them because they hadn't like followed enough of those purification laws so that they could get dragged back out, their dead body. I mean, that's how seriously the temple priests took their purification laws. And the Pharisees believed that everyone should live by these laws, even outside the temple. And so what they did is they created this structure, this system of enforcing ceremony, enforcing laws and enforcing regulations, not just on themselves, but on all of Jewish culture and all of Jewish society at large. And Jesus had to deal with these people all the time because Jesus was a rabbi. Jesus was recognized as a Jewish religious teacher. People followed him to listen to his teachings. And Jesus' teachings would contradict things that the Pharisees would say over and over and over again. And Jesus butted heads with this idea of religious regulations, of religious expectations, and of the burden of those things. In fact, Jesus described the weight of these things in Matthew chapter 23, 1 through 4. He's teaching the crowds and his disciples, and he says this in Matthew 23, 1 through 4. He said, the teachers of religious law and the Pharisees are the official interpreters of the law of Moses. And they were. They were the guys who were considered religiously conservative. And if you wanted to know what the Jewish law was really trying to say and how you were supposed to live, they would interpret it right down to the smallest, tiniest, most onerous detail. And so Jesus is saying, these guys are the official ruler, official interpreters of the law of Moses. So practice and obey whatever they tell you, but don't follow their example. Because they don't practice what they teach. They crush people with unbearable religious demands, and they never lift a finger to ease the burden. I sense a little bit of sarcasm in what Jesus is saying. He's teaching, you know, the Pharisees, listen, they're the interpreters of the law, so listen, you need to follow everything they say. Right, guys? Wink, wink. Follow all they say. But listen, they don't get it, because what they do is they're just stacking these burdensome religious laws on people. And the Jewish people at the time, particular people who were poor, particular people who didn't have access to the higher levels of Jewish society, I mean, they were just weighed down by all this stuff, crushed under the burdens of it. And Jesus calls it out for what it is, a weight on the people's necks that's weighing them down. And we deal with similar pressures today too, I think. I mean, you know, the Pharisees did this in kind of a religious context. We don't live as much in that kind of religious culture and religious society. But that sense of expectation, that pressure to perform, that pressure to be perfect, I think we understand it and we can relate to it because it's on us too. culture, society, I mean, even you could, modern church, it puts these things on us, these expectations that we even find them and put them on ourselves. I mean, we talked about moms. Moms, you guys can totally understand what I'm talking about because you know what it feels like to walk into like a parent-teacher meeting and you know all the other moms have gone through and you just want like, please, God, let my kid be the one who's good. Please let this teacher say that my kid has never caused any problems because if they say that my kid, you know, threw Play-Doh into another kid's face, I'm just going to bury myself in the sand and hide forever. In fact, okay, so this, I wasn't going to share this. This is, I don't want to make this make me sound bad. This is just an observation, okay? So I'm observing something, I'm sharing an observation with you. So when I was younger, the homeschooling movement had kind of just started, right? So go with me. If you're homeschooled or you homeschool your kids, please take no offense to this. This is an observation. So when I was younger, the observation of homeschooling was this, is that moms who homeschooled were moms who wore long denim skirts and buns on their heads. And like that was, right? That was homeschooling, right? And it was just like homeschooling came across as like, if you saw someone who's homeschooled, you could probably expect them to be, you know, maybe a little sheltered, maybe literally not clued into society and culture and what's kind of cool. And that was homeschooling when I was younger. So fast forward to now, our church office, we share a church office with First Assembly of God here in Normal. And that building hosts a homeschool group every Thursday. And so for the last couple of years, this homeschool group will come in and like they'll bring all the kids together so they can have kind of a school experience together. And then the rest of their education happens at home. And here's what is interesting about this homeschool group. And this, I was kind of shocked by this when it first started, is that when I expected that homeschool group to come in, I expected these really meek and, you know, long denim skirts, buns on the head, you know, Bibles in the hand. That's what I expected from this homeschool group. I expected like, you know, little boys with, you know, khaki pants and their shirts buttoned down, tucked in with like, you know, farmer hats on. I don't know. That's just kind of what I expected from this homeschool group. But here's what's crazy. It wasn't that because when I looked at the moms who were there, guys, I am not joking. It was less Farm and Fleet and it was more catwalk because the homeschool moms who were walking in there, they were like wearing these cool fashionable clothes and they all looked really good and they were like, you know, fashionable and like kind of like sexy-ish. I mean, like that's not like... I didn't think they were sexy. It's Mother's Day. I think my wife is very sexy. But like, I want you to know, like, so like all of a sudden, like homeschool moms are no longer just like, you know, the Farm and Fleet shopping. Now they're like these like shopping at Express, you know, hey, come on, Junior, let's come in. After this, we'll go to the mall and get our whole outfit at the Buckle. It's like, well, I don't even understand what's happening with this. Cause now it's like, they're so cool. And what's crazy about this is I walk into this homeschool group just as someone who works in that office. And I'm like, oh crap. I look stupid. These women are so much cooler than me and their kids are going to be cooler than me and their whole families are cooler than my family. What's going on? I feel the pressure and I'm like, how in the world can moms feel today when they look around and see moms walking in and they're in perfect shape because they go to the gym and they're wearing these perfect expensive clothes and their kids are perfectly obedient and perfectly good. And I'm like, how in the world can a mom with kids who, like my kids, deal with this sense of expectation and pressure? How do you deal with the pressure that says, not only do I have to be, you know, a good disciplinarian, not only do I have to, you know, keep my house in line and keep my cabinets stocked with food and keep the refrigerator full and make good meals and go to the gym and wear nice clothes and stink and put on makeup in the morning before I go out and do anything and not wear sweats, which my daughter calls give up on life pants, when I go out into the world every day? But moms, I want you to know that like the pressure and expectation that you feel is not unique to just you. This is something that has been put on people for generations. Because here's the thing, that expectation, moms, that you feel and that so many of the rest of us feel in different contexts, it's the same as religion. You know, we don't live in a religious context in a religious society anymore, and so we don't necessarily think about trying to measure ourselves up to old-time religion. You know, maybe that was kind of passed in American culture and we used to do that, but those days have kind of passed. But just because they passed doesn't mean there's not a new religion that has kind of crept in to crush us and to weigh us down. And Jesus has a response to this pressure and expectation that we feel and that we put on ourselves. And in Matthew chapter 11, we find Jesus, he's teaching the crowds, he's teaching the people, and he's responding to some of the things that the Pharisees are saying. He's frustrated that they're creating an environment of unbelief, that they're not getting what he's saying, and he's just tired of it. And he's kind of railing on him. He's saying, listen, if Sodom and Gomorrah had seen the things that I had done today, they would have fallen on their faces and repented. But you people are so evil. You're so wrapped up in your rules and in your religion that you can't even see what's in front of your faces. And he ends this whole, like, really discourse of just chewing these people up by praying. He's like, God, you know what, God, thank you so much that you've chosen to reveal yourself through me to people who are unexpected, to people who are poor, to people who are uninformed, to people with childlike faith, rather than these people who think they're so smart and have it all together, because he's just fed up with it. And then Jesus, after being fed up with the Pharisees and fed up with these religious people who are just missing the point, he kind of pivots and he addresses the people who've been crushed under the weight of religion, crushed under the weight of expectation, crushed under the weight of this perfection that's been placed on them that they need to accomplish and need to reach. And he pivots and he speaks to them. And then Jesus said this in Matthew chapter 11, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I'm humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden that I give you is light." Jesus speaking to a religious crowd about religion says this. He says, you know what? These guys are offering you a direction in life that's burdensome, and it's heavy, and you know it, and you've been crushed under the weight of these laws. You've been crushed under the weight of these regulations. You've been crushed under the weight of this way that you think you're supposed to live, of the person you think you're supposed to be, of the way you think you're supposed to come across in society, and it's killing you. It's crushing you. And he says, just stop, because if you follow me, if you come to me, all of that stuff, you can take it off. You can get rid of it. Because when you follow me, the burden I'm going to give you is easy. It's light. You're barely going to even know that it's there. And make no mistake, when Jesus talks to this crowd, Jesus is talking about religion. And sometimes we can look at this and we can take a lot of comfort in it and say, man, I'm burdened. I'm worn out. I'm just, you know, I feel like, you know, nothing's going my way and I need to just come to Jesus and you know, he's going to carry my burdens. And that is true. But I want you to know this, what Jesus is talking about right here in this moment, Jesus is contrasting the lifestyle of religion that Jewish religion was offering these people with the lifestyle of relationship with God that Jesus is offering. Jesus is saying you can have religion that's heavy and burdensome and that will crush you and it will never stop, because the expectations just get more and more and more, and you just have to be more perfect and more perfect and more perfect, and you will never measure up. And if that's the life you want, it will crush you under the burden. And if you want religion, that's what you can have. But if you want relationship with me, if you want to follow me, he's saying forget religion. Follow me in relationship. And all of a sudden, you're going to discover that a relationship with me is light, and it's easy, and it's not burdensome. And he even said, all that other stuff, I'll carry that for you. All the religious expectations that we think we need to be, I'll carry that for you, because as you follow me, as you walk in relationship with me, that stuff is going to work itself out in you naturally, easily. You don't have to carry it. Because religion says, work harder. Religion says, do better, carry more weight. And Jesus says, take it easy. Jesus says, take it easy. I'm going to carry this burden for you. Religion says, put more on yourself. Start small, but then putting more on yourself. And then the more you put on yourself, the more religious you are and the better you're going to be. And Jesus says, no, 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 take it all off. All I want you to do is to follow me. And the modern religion of our culture today says this. It says, you know what? You need to look perfect. You know what? You need to be in perfect shape. You know what? You need to have great clothes. You need to have great kids. You need to watch The View every day so you know current events. You know, you need to be in the PTA. You need to have a woman's book club that you go to every week. And you need to have a woman's Bible study that you go to every week. And you need to make sure that your kids look great, their hair is always combed, their clothes are always clean and always put together. And you always need to make sure that your husband's the happiest guy in the world. Just stack those things on yourself. Put them on, and it's just going to crush you. And it's a burden that's tearing you down. Because it's this modern religion of expectation that we put on ourselves. You know, it's not even just moms, students. You know, I've got to get perfect grades. I've got to get into that right school. I've got to get that right first job, because if I don't, my career is gone. I've got to marry the right person, because if I don't, my whole life is going to be ruined. I've got to do this and this and this. I've got to get in the right house. I've got to move to the right city. I've got to make the right connections. And it's a burdensome religion of expectations. For some of us guys, I've got to get ahead in my career. I've got to advance. I've got to make more money. I've got to get a bigger house, because my neighbor has a nicer house than me, and it's embarrassing that my house looks like this. You know, I've got to do this remodeling on the outside of my home because it looks bad. I got to do the landscaping. I've got to have a better car. I've got to do all these things. And it's a religion of expectation, and it's a religion of pressure, and it's burdensome. And what Jesus wants you all to know is this: whether it's an Old Testament religion, whether it's a modern day religion, that Jesus is saying, stop messing with religion. Put those expectations aside. Don't chase those things anymore, because all I want you to do is follow me. And when you follow me, you're going to be amazed at how much you can take it easy, because when you think about nothing more than your relationship with me, everything else is going to be taken care of. Jesus wants to remove from you the burden of religion. And not just the stuff of life that, you know, that wears us down and makes us tired, and, you know, not just that, the burden of religious expectation that we put on ourselves, and he wants to set you free from it. And he's saying this, he's saying, are you tired? Come to me. Are you overcommitted? Come to me. Are you discouraged? Come to me. Are you dissatisfied? Are you stressed out? Come to me. Are you tired of not measuring up to all the other people around you that you see? Come to me. Jesus wants to work you through that. Jesus wants to lift those burdens off you, because it's not about being a good Christian. It's about being a good follower. And can I just tell you, let me just do this. I just want to remove from you the burden of being a good Christian today. Some of you guys are like, I just want to be a good Christian. I need to do this. I need to pray. I need to read my Bible. I need to talk to my kids about Jesus and tuck them in at night and pray. And, you know, I need to give an offering. Can I just for a second just remove you the burdens that says I need to be a good Christian? Forget that. You don't need to be a good Christian. I don't know if you should tweet that or not, but but you don't. Don't worry about being a good Christian. All you need to worry about is this question: am I following Jesus? Am I following Jesus? It's not about religion. It's not about the title Christianity. It's not about the expectations that our culture, society puts on us. It's about this: am I following Jesus? And can I tell you, if you do, you will be amazed at how easy life becomes. You will be amazed at how unburdened you are when you make the decision to say, I'm not going to pursue any of these things. I'm not going to pursue perfection. I'm not going to try to meet people's expectations. And I'm not going to try to meet religion. I'm just going to follow Jesus. And he will transform and change your life. And the burdens will fly off of you, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. Let me pray for you this morning. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for your word. And I thank you, God, that, Lord, more than anything else, that a relationship with you, the journey of following you, Jesus, it's not about accomplishment. It's not about checking off a checklist of things that we need to do, and it's not about leveling up to the next level of spirituality, but Jesus, really what a relationship with you is about just keeping our eyes on you, and every day taking a step closer and closer to you. And so God, I pray right now for every single person in this room who feels burdened, who feels the pressure and weight of expectation on their lives. God, I pray right now that you would give them a sense that you are with them and that you are for them, and that's not your hope for them, that's not your dream for them, and it's not your plan for them to feel burdened and weighed down anymore. With everyone's heads bowed and eyes closed, I just want to pray for a group of people in here. If you are in this room this morning, I know that this is a time of year where school's coming to an end and we're celebrating Mother's Day, and I know that like the seasons are changing and everything's just nice and beautiful, but I also know this, is that for many of us, the pressure and the burdens of expectation in our lives can be overwhelming. And you've been fighting it, and you've been trying to measure up, but you can't, and you can hardly look yourself in the mirror anymore because you just can't be the person who you want to be. You can't be the person who you think you should be, and you can't be the person who you're looking at across the table or across the room or across the gym. And this morning, you want to be unburdened. You want to let go of those things. You want to let go of this religion of expectations that our culture and society has. And you want to say, Chris, I just want to know how easy and unburdensome it is to follow Jesus. If that's you, I just want to pray with you. Just right now, I'm not going to embarrass you. Slip your hand up. If you say, Chris, I'm burdened. I need to be unburdened this morning. I want to pray with you. There's hands all over this room. Heavenly Father, I pray for every single person who's lifted a hand in this place, and I ask in your name, Jesus, that right now that you would set them free from the burden of expectation in their life, whether that's a religious expectation that they're not measuring up to some standard of religion, God, whether that's an expectation they're not measuring up to some standard in culture or society or in their group of friends or at work or at school, God, my prayer is this right now is that you would set us free from this weight. And as we cast our burden on you because you care for us, God, I pray this, that you would replace it with your burden and your yoke, which is easy and it's light. And God, I pray, Lord, that as we leave this place, we would take a step closer and closer to you. We love you, God, and we pray all of this in your name, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.